Hi, welcome to another episode of the Leadership Enigma. Now, you know the message, don't you? We are available on all your major podcast platforms. And please check out the YouTube channel because we are now loading all of the back catalogue and every single episode in this wonderful new studio will find its way very quickly onto YouTube. So please subscribe so that you don't miss out on any of that content. Well, I'm looking forward to another episode here in the studio. This really is all about the weight of expectation. You know, when we're born, there is always expectation on us from some quarter in some way to some degree. And how do we manage that? How do we navigate that? How do we succeed? Or how do we actually carve our own path? So come back to me just after this, where I've got the wonderful Jack Sullivan with me, and we will have a pretty cool conversation in relation to life. Come back to me just after this.
You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, powered by Transform Performance International, a podcast for the insatiably curious to explore the power of human-centered leadership to create real momentum for positive and sustainable change. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors as we discover that success leaves clues. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
It's a big warm welcome to Jack. Jack, how are you? Welcome to the Leadership Enigma.
Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I keep asking everybody, we're in the new studio. What do you reckon? Because you had a bit of a reaction to the studio.
I have to say, I've not done loads of these, but all the ones I have done, this is the best studio I've seen to date or been in to date.
Well, that is high praise indeed, actually. I think James will have a smile on his face when he hears that. Listen, Jack, let me kind of ask you this question, because many people may know you, certainly of the family, of your dad, who's the owner of West Ham as well. And so the reason I wanted us to chat was about that weight of expectation. So let me ask you this first question, which I've asked a number of guests. There's a lot that you could Google and see about Jack Sullivan, but the reality is, who is Jack Sullivan? How do you describe yourself to people?
I don't know. Probably best to ask my friends. I don't know. I try and, I don't know, take things one step at a time, try and, well, like, think I'm quite grounded and know that my dad's always got a saying, you never experience the highs too high and never experience the lows too low, and then just keep moving forward and try and be happy, be as happy as you can type thing, and do what makes you happy really as well. So that's sort of what I try and live my life by, is try and do what makes me happy, but also to try and help others and to push everything forward, not just yeah. Me.
Well, we'll come on to that as well, won't we, Jack? Because how old are you? I know how old you are, but tell me.
I'm 23.
You know, I feel so old when you say that, Jack. I really do. So I'm trying not to be too worried about that. So 23 years old. For many people, you might have come to notice actually when you were 19, because when you were 19, you were actually made the managing director of West Ham Ladies. That's right.
Younger.
Younger. Was it younger?
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 17.
17?
Yeah.
Let's just put things in context. Just explain at the moment how you're associated with West Ham. I know it's your dad, but just give people that context.
Yeah, so about 13 years ago now,
yep.
My dad came into like my room at the time and was like, I'll see you tomorrow because I'm off to go buy West Ham. So that was like at 10:30 at night. When I was like, I don't know, 13 or whatever. And then the next day it was all on like Sky Sports News and this, that and the other. And obviously we've been on a long old journey with West Ham. And then when I was 16, I decided I didn't want to go to university because I thought there's no better university than, if I love football and I've got an amazing mentor in my dad, yeah, I may as well go straight into the business side of things. So I worked in every single department at West Ham for a year. And then at the end of that year, I said to my dad, look, I'd like to, instead of like being adopted by all these different apartments for like a month and then having to go somewhere else, I was like, look, I'd like to have a full-time sort of role where I can wake up every day and I know what I'm doing and almost to progress things on.
Wow.
At the time, I just I've always loved the idea of women's football and to help something grow. I love to help, like, anything that starts small that can grow very quick. Okay. So I find it, like, incredibly exciting.
Let me go backwards to go forwards. Yeah. There's so many questions already because I love this. So let me get this right. So your dad, David, walks into your room when you're about 30 and goes, by the way, I'm going to buy West Ham.
Yeah, I was 10. Yeah, 10 or 9. Yeah,
okay, so that's interesting. Yeah. Not many people will have that particular conversation. Mm-hmm. So that's – what was the fascination or the interest, do you know?
In West Ham?
Yeah, well, in football at that time. Yeah,
so my dad's been involved in football for – 30 years, so previously was Birmingham.
Yeah.
He tried to buy West Ham about, I don't know, 20 years ago as well, but wasn't allowed to. And then it came that the opportunity presented itself that he could buy West Ham. And we left Birmingham 6 months before, and he said, oh, I'm going to have, I think it was less than that, like 3 months before, and he said, I'm going to have 2 years off. I don't want to do anything to do with football. And then this amazing opportunity to buy West Ham came up with his partner at the time, David Gold.
Yeah.
And it just sort of all sort of happened, and all happened quite quickly.
Was it West Ham? Dad, was that deliberate? Dad was
from Hornchurch. Or lived in Cardiff, and then his dad was in the Navy. So not the Navy, the RAF.
Yeah.
So they jumped from a few places, and then he ended up in Hornchurch. And it was like his team, really. So it for him to almost be able to do that, and he used to sneak in like over the wall or under the turnstile when he was much younger at Upton Park. So it was for him and David Gold, who were both West Ham fans. It was obviously an incredible, like, sort of space in time where they had an opportunity to almost buy their football club, which was incredibly exciting.
Many people's dream of that. So obviously you grew up in a very entrepreneurial environment and a successful entrepreneurial environment. And with success always comes challenge, of course. So what was it like for you and your siblings to grow up in a highly entrepreneurial environment where there was success, but there was challenge and there was opportunity? What was it like, or did it in some ways not really register with you?
I've got one brother as well, and I think for both of us, we were always very, very — dad was extremely open with us, like always was very open, like if something happened or something went wrong or this, or he was going to do this decision, even if he got an earful back from me and Dave, which I don't know, when you're 13 walking around, you think life's very black and white, and you realize quite quickly as you grow up that everything's gray and you can't really — there's not always a right and a wrong, and like, so we used to have big arguments or whatever, especially on summer holidays during January transfer windows and things like that.
And so I was
extremely lucky that he was always very open with us, and there was I suppose never really an expectation on our shoulders, or he just wanted us to be happy, and he's still the same now. Same with my mum as well. They just, as long as we're happy, they're happy type thing. But I don't know, for me, there was almost — expectations probably not the right word, but there was almost like a standard set where my dad — I'd go down at 10 o'clock at night and he'd be doing emails, and I'd be waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning and he'd be in his office. So there was always an expectation and I suppose a mass work ethic on top of an incredibly clever person. I sadly didn't get his math genes. I got my mum's math genes instead. But my dad's like, he can think about something already before someone else has thought about it with his map. Like, well, remember when we was younger, we used to just say random numbers and times it by this and do this and do this, and he'd give you the answer quicker than a calculator could get it.
Is your dad a bit of a visionary as well, that he sees opportunity or what something could be before maybe somebody else?
I think so, and I think he's very good at being very proactive and very quick and proactive as well, and he makes decisions like unemotional decisions, which I think is a serious gift that I think a lot of people can get almost hung up on something, or they can feel an attachment to something, where he's very good at looking at something. Okay, this is this, this is the correct decision.
Okay.
Which I think is an incredible skill that I'm still trying to master. But hopefully I can. Obviously, the one decision that was obviously very emotional was West Ham.
Which, trust me, we're going to come on to that. We really will. So what I'm hearing, and help me, Jack, if I'm summarising this wrong, because I'm really passionate about helping young people as well to thrive and to do the best they can do. And I'm hearing you say that some will say, well, you were born into a privileged environment, but others, I want them to understand that you were born into an environment where you're saying there was a very high work ethic, and that the expectation wasn't on you doing something specific, but the expectation was that you were going to graft.
I don't know, really. I think that, to be honest, you'd have to ask my parents. I don't think there was ever really, like,
we're going to phone them right now. We're going to bring them in.
Could do if you want. I don't think there was ever sort of like an expectation almost. It was just, look, try your... I suppose maybe the expectation was try your best. The one thing they wouldn't want
is
if...
What I mean by the work, yeah, work
where,
for
where
it.
Where if it was maybe, look, like, be on time, be nice to people, be polite to people.
Yeah.
And... be, yeah, as long as you're a nice person, we've not let ourselves down, type thing. I think mum and dad. So I think that was probably the I suppose the expectation. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a credit to them, isn't it? And I want to come back to, obviously, your first involvement. You see, you said at 16 you started to work, or in some ways do all the departments within with West Ham. So what prompted you to go then to your dad and say, do you know what? I want a different challenge. Which then subsequently turned into you being the managing director for the ladies team. But firstly, what prompted you to want that particular challenge? And then we'll come on to what the challenge was. But why?
I suppose it was probably the women's team at the time had just come in-house. It was being ran externally. Yep. And then it came in-house. I think it was the January of that year. And then by May, I had finished all the departments. And I was sort of like, well, what am I going to do now, type thing. And I wanted a challenge, type thing, where, and then at the time the women's team were semi-professional as well. Right. So it was one of those things where I don't think a lot could go wrong, type thing. I think, well, I don't know. But obviously for me, it was an unbelievable way to, I think my dad loved it as well, because it was like how to learn how to run like a mini West Ham sort of thing as well. Okay. And learn how to sell tickets, or how a player argues with the manager, or how, I don't know, a coaching staff, like, we ended up parting ways with the manager within the first four months, type thing. So, because results weren't quite as good as what we hoped they would be. So, but it's, I don't know, it's all of those sorts of things where I think it was almost a perfect fit. Like, I love football. I've been around football for 21 years or 23 years, and at the time would have been 17 years.
That's your whole life?
Yeah, my whole life. And every Saturday I was at the men's game, and every Sunday I'd be at the women's game. And I've seen also with football how things can go super well and how things can go super badly. So I think that was almost the time where I'd finished all my work experience.
Yes.
And it was like, okay, so what do we do next, type thing. And I think that was the natural step, if that makes sense. And it was a opportunity that arose that, to be honest, since I was about 14 on, I always thought that side of the football club could be developed a lot more, like as it is now, type thing.
Right. Okay. You're still very young. Well, you're young now, Jack, but you're still very young at the time of taking on that particular role. And the women's game was, do I describe it as in its infancy still, but it was very different to now, I think, which is phenomenal, where the WSL is now. So what were some of your greatest challenges with coming into the women's game many years ago?
Yeah, so I suppose for me at the time, there was a few challenges. So number one, when I was much younger, used to tweet transfer news.
Right.
So there was a lot of, like, West Ham transfer news. So a lot of the West Ham fans knew who I was, and I think a lot of them probably still do think I was like a sport, seventeen year old at the
time.
This
is what I mean by expectation, though. This is people who don't know you, but can read about you or see you in the media, mm-hmm. and therefore there is a viewpoint. How do you combat that, or how do you deal with that? Many people who think they know you, but they have no idea who you are. Let's be honest.
I don't know. For me, it's one of those things that, look, if I look back now, I wouldn't have tweeted the transfer news. I don't think.
Yeah.
I just don't think it was the wisest move at the time.
So you've learned something.
Yeah, of course. Process. But look, when you're 13, you do stuff when you're 13. And some of it was amazing. I got 90,000 followers. It was when there was obviously something good to tweet, it was obviously great.
Yeah.
But I do think it's difficult because you almost set expectation for not only yourself, but also for when you say, oh, this should happen, and then it falls out of bed,
sure.
Then it's very difficult. And then there's an why, what's gone wrong there type thing. So I think that's part of it. And then it's one of those things where I think you just try and change perception type thing as well, where you just, when I got announced, there was hundreds of people saying, oh, this is a joke type
thing. As the manager,
so it was this is a joke, how's this 17-year-old doing this? Boom, 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 boom. And then I just kept very calm and relaxed and just tried to plod on type thing.
I want to talk about this bit, Jack. I'll tell you why. I was really thinking about this because it's very easy, I think, for some people to dismiss this, but I think this is an incredibly high-profile role that is given to you at a very early age. And I'll give you just a very quick experience. I'm 22 years old. I've qualified as a barrister only for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I remember going to represent someone in the family court, and this couple are literally screaming at each other in the corridors of the court, and she hands me the baby while she has the argument. Mm-hmm. And I remember holding the baby, thinking, what am I doing? And I remember the husband looking at me and saying, well, how old are you? What do you know about life? And the answer was, Jack, I didn't. And I felt a real imposter at that point, in wig and gown, holding their baby whilst they were having a massive ruck in the corridor. So that was kind of my experience, and I was thinking about that in relation
So when you were like that, how did you feel like?
I love it. Now I'm getting questions this direction. I felt like an imposter, Jack.
Yeah.
I felt that actually whilst I had...
And did you feel like you couldn't do it, or did you...
Well, I had to.
Yeah.
I think I had to. I had to step into the role because mm-hmm. I'd worked hard to be in that role, so I'd earned being mm-hmm. in that particular role. But also, I had to acknowledge that the feedback was also correct. At 22 years old, Jack, I didn't have a lot of life experience.
Yeah.
They were both older than me, mm-hmm. and I didn't have children. I wasn't married. So there was an element of, I can do my job to the best of my ability, but I don't have...
No, experience is obviously crucial,
So how did you balance that? If you're 17 years old, and lots of people are going, this is crazy, you've been handed this, and you're thinking, hang on, I really want to make a go of this.
Yeah.
How do you do
that? So there was a few things. I kept quite quiet and just sort of went about the role. And I'll be honest, at the start, we were not good.
There was a documentary about this as well.
That was the year after.
Okay. So we'll come on to that as well. Then. Let's just crank the pressure up even more, right?
So for that, it was sort of go about your business, push things on. But what I would say is, maybe I didn't have the experience, but I was extremely fortunate that there was, I don't know, 100 people, 150 people at the club that all have mass experience. Like, I sat in the stadium office, and Tara, who's head of marketing, worked at the club for 15 years. Andy Mollett, the same. Obviously, Dad with mass experience. And I also think there's always three ways of learning as well. There's listening, doing, and another one, which I forgot.
You know, it should come back to you, right?
Doing... and watching.
Okay.
So I think where I was quite fortunate was I've been around people and I've been able to watch people. Obviously, it's completely different because we were semi-pro at the time. But I've been watching people since I was zero.
Listening.
Watching.
Shadowing in
many ways. Those sorts of things. So that, I think that obviously gave me a lot of... I know, experience, maybe not first-hand experience, but second-hand experience. And then also I was extremely lucky that I had a lot of people around me.
Yeah.
And I think it's also, you've got to follow your gut as well a little bit. And also be very open to say, look, I don't know what I'm doing. I think one of the most terrifying things is when someone thinks they know what they're doing and they don't. But at the same time,
try and blag it.
Yeah, and I think at the same time, my naivety was probably probably quite a big plus as well, because you go in everywhere fearless and you think, oh, what's the worst that can go wrong?
I went in
everywhere fearless, and I was also very like quick to make a decision, which I've sort of lost a bit, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm a lot more...
Tell me what you mean. Why do you think you've lost that?
So, I don't know. I think when you're like, I don't know, 17, you just say, oh, well, that's what we're doing. And you just crack on. You don't listen to the comms people around, especially at West Ham, the comms people around you, the marketing person, the ticketing person. You sort of just say, oh, no, we're doing this type thing. Where I think a little bit with... me now,
yes,
which I think is probably a good thing, is you want to listen to all the stakeholders or everyone you're speaking to, and then make, even if you don't agree with what they're all saying,
yeah,
you can still say that, well, that's the right decision. Like with a lot of the businesses I do now, we'll talk about stuff and then you try and get a balanced sort of opinion. But sometimes, especially when you're at West Ham, there were some decisions that I think a lot of people wouldn't have done, but
right,
I sort of supported myself. And then I think even then, if you can try and explain your decision to the staff, then you can get their buy-in a lot more as well, which I think is obviously incredibly important, yeah, to at least, even if they don't agree with you, to say that they felt listened and they can understand your point of view. I think that's obviously incredibly, incredibly powerful as well. And I'd like to say that, to be honest, a lot of the staff at West Ham now I speak to on a regular basis, and a lot of the staff that have left, I still speak to as well.
So you're leveraging a lot of support there.
Yeah.
Was there anyone who stood out as a real mentor to you in those early years when you probably, you know, you're fearless, but you're actually quite vulnerable?
Yeah. There's probably, obviously, dad was incredibly good. My mum was incredibly supportive as well, which I completely, like, is amazing to have that sort of support.
I'm a big fan of mums.
Yeah.
Sometimes the unsung hero, right?
And then I suppose there was a few people like Max, who's now at Wolves, Head of Comms. I sat next to him for a long time, and Ben Campbell I sat next to for a long time. And there was quite a few of the support staff of the women's team as well that were incredibly, incredibly good as well. That almost helped us a long way on our journey.
Yeah.
Which is obviously super helpful. I'll probably forget some people as well.
Well, I know. Well, there's probably a big shout out to lots of people for along the way. It sounds as if you're very much almost like a sponge and just taking in as much as you can. As you say, you're listening, you're doing, you're watching, but mm-hmm. you're also really taking advice from people as well.
I think as well, it's about listening to people, but also don't get bogged down. Like, know what, I don't know what I always thought was, firstly, do everything one step at a time.
Yeah.
But try and have some goals that you can try and hit along the way type thing, whether you hit that and then instantly try and get that to more.
Yeah.
But I think it's all about setting yourself goals and then trying to work towards them, but in small steps, if that makes sense.
A lot of people talk about priorities. What was the priority for you when you took over the ladies team at a young age? What was the real number one standout priority?
To probably get to the WSL. That was the ultimate goal in the first year, 100%. Right. That was the no-brainer. And although we was in the third division halfway through that year, there was, because Notts County went into administration, there was another club that went into administration, the FA did like a restructuring of all the leagues and basically said, if you want to be in the top division, you have to fill in all this criteria. You have to have these full-time professionals. You have to show that you're not going to go bust, basically. And then if you want to go into the second division, this is what you need to do. And if you want to go into third division, this is what you need to do type thing. So definitely by about the January that year, we were pretty focused on making sure that our WSL proposal was the very best it could be. And they actually turned around to us and was like, it's the best one we've ever had. So it was testament to us. And it was incredibly exciting. And then after the very bad form of the first half of the season, the second half of the season was a lot better. So we ended up winning two cup competitions, which was great as well. And at the time, it meant so much to me to, like, we was at Averley. Averley beating Charlton 2-1. There was like 1,000 people there. A year later, we was at Wembley. But in a weird sort of way, winning at Averley because it was like such a journey. And for me at the time, it was that was almost a bigger achievement, or maybe not achievement, but it felt bigger at the time than what Wembley felt a year later, which was weird. But I didn't know it was a weird feeling.
Look, we're in a season at the moment where I think we've had the most Premiership managers sacked.
Mm-hmm.
So you're managing West Ham Ladies, and you said that there was a time, the first part of the season, it was pretty dire.
Yeah.
So how did you feel at that time, and how did you lift yourself or help lift others when things aren't going well? Because that's a challenge that all managers have got. So yeah, how are you dealing with that?
I think with the women's team, what was incredibly good was there were so many ways for us to win. It wasn't like the stadium was full every week. This was this. We had loads of commercial partners, and we just had to focus on the football. We had to focus on everything because it was a semi-professional team.
Okay.
We needed to shorten that, the loss that we were having. We needed to make sure that the team could then compete and to make sure that all of these things could happen. So I think how I motivated myself was to make sure that we were growing things, to make sure that we were doing our first commercial deal. I remember it now vividly, and they were here and I was printing off the contract and I was running backwards and forwards all around the stadium. And when you talk about not like you at 22 turning up to the courtroom, that was a bit like me on the first day. I did this commercial deal, and it was again another big achievement for me, where it was something the first time I've done it, and I almost then could say, okay, I can do this type thing. And it was almost me running all around the stadium trying to get this printed out, getting this pen, and trying to do this and trying to make sure everyone was happy.
Probably stood you in good stead. Yeah. You've done all those little mini roles within West Ham beforehand. I mean, what's your biggest takeaway or learning from that period of you involved with the ladies? Is there a real
standout? All of my time at the ladies.
Yeah.
Because
let's be honest, it was the pressure was cranked again, because then you had a TV documentary team with you, right? And
then yeah,
were there
so
for a season.
So we had 6 weeks to go from semi-professional to professional. We got like a training ground. Or like a large part of the training ground was like built. We built it all from scratch. We signed 16 players. We brought in 10 staff. And I think during all of that experience, there was a mixture of, firstly, how are we going to compete?
Yeah.
Because you're bringing in all these new players, you're bringing in all these new staff, and you think that it's all makes sense in your head, but you're like, at the same time, this could all come back to like explode in our face. We brought in Matt Beard, who's amazing, and I still speak to him now. He's now at Liverpool. And I remember we sat there on the first day against Reading, and we drew 0-0, and it was the biggest relief that I had in our first WSL game. We drew 0-0. It was the most boring game, but it was a massive sense of relief that, okay, we can compete at this level, because you're always worried you're going to lose like 5-0 in the first game, and then it's a bit like, okay. But yeah, no, I think the TV cameras was great, and the big reason we did that was I just wanted to get as much awareness about the team as possible, whether that was to sponsors, whether that was to generate people thinking about women's football and then hopefully thinking about West Ham, whether that was someone who lived opposite where we played and they'd watch us one night on BBC One or on BBC Three and then turn around and say, oh, I'm going to follow them on Instagram. And then in 2 weeks' time, they realise we've got a game, and then they come to watch us. So it was all of those sorts of things. And I think the big thing, they'll never tell me this, but I'm pretty sure the reason they wanted to film is they thought it could be a car crash. I'm 100%.
Listening or watching this, if you know the answer to that, what was the real reason behind it? Do you think that documentary and that focus did something for the women's game, though? Propel it forward?
I think so. Like, we were being seen by... Each episode of that was being seen by just under 2 million people.
Wow.
So I think it's got to have... Although I was like David Brennan in the first two episodes... I think it definitely had an effect, and it probably made people think about women's football.
Yes.
And that was my whole sort of premise, was to just try and make sure that people talking about women's football or thinking about or looking at women's football, even if it was in a negative light, it was still good that it was being spoken about type thing.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Well, I think yes and no, but I think it's like, it's obviously, I just thought it was massively important that we were highlighting that this was happening.
Yeah.
And we had, I don't know, 10 internationals from Canada, South Korea, Germany, all these sorts of different sort of countries
yeah.
that were all coming to England playing for West Ham. And then we obviously eventually got to Wembley that season, which was an amazing.
We got to a cup final.
Yeah, we got to the FA Cup final where there was obviously 42,000 people were there,
yes.
which was obviously an incredible achievement for not only me but for everyone at the team, which was a testament to all of the staff and all of. And the players.
It's
and,
a big achievement yeah. for all, isn't it?
And it was also what I thought as well was we all made, or they all made a ridiculous gamble on me and also the club. So it was nice to turn around and say thank you.
So you stepped down for that role, I think, in what year? Remind me. When.
So I stood down about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you've become a director of the club itself.
Yeah.
So now the stakes are higher again in some ways. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you're not still on the sideline, perhaps managing now. That's somebody else's responsibility. But how does that feel for you now as a step change? Because now you're part of the men's club and we're talking now an iconic club, which it is, of course, for mm-hmm. so many. It's a religion for many. Does it feel different for you in this role?
Yeah, so I'm not as hands-on day-to-day
yep.
as what I was obviously before. And it's obviously an incredible privilege, really. And obviously the stakes are, well, definitely financially are all a lot higher as well. So it's quite different. And I just try and work whenever I'm needed or need to help, then I try and help. And I'm still doing bits for the women's team as well because it's okay. like it's like my baby, really.
Yeah.
So. It's one of those things where if they ever need me and a lot of the staff that are still there from when I was there,
yes.
so they will reach out to me or they'll say, can you help us with this? Or do you know how this works? Because I was sort of, I don't know, I not micromanaged, but I was very hands-on in every, even to who we use for our coach travel and how that's changed or what this works or who we used to get. So there's small bits where sometimes they need help with where, because I was there for a long time, you sort of to gauge okay. it and
you
know
the ropes, but then
yeah,
you've
know the ins and outs. Yeah.
And empower other people to get on.
Yeah, 100%. And I think for me, the big reason I left was I just felt like it was time for me to move on. We appointed a new manager
yes.
and we appointed a new general manager. The general manager was there for probably about a year, and then the manager was there for probably about 3 months before I left. And I just felt that I was 21 at the time. And I felt like it was a perfect time to let everyone else sort of build this thing. I sort of built it.
Yeah.
How I always describe to everyone is I built the house and now it probably needed redecorating with fresh ideas, new sound, new voice, a new this. And that was sort of why I decided to step back, and also for my own sort of personal development, I wanted to learn other skills that were outside of football.
I'm going to come on to that as well,
mm-hmm.
but let me just stay with the current role. Just give you a little bit of an insider's viewpoint, because again, many people are looking in.
Mm-hmm.
West Ham had a difficult season at the start of the season, and now they've doing rather well, including that draw against Arsenal. Did you see or feel a shift that has now in some ways started to deliver better results? Or could you put your finger on something where you could see that there was a turn?
I think there's a few things. I think something that's massively underrated in football and something that no one ever speaks about is luck.
Right.
And also I think momentum is incredibly important as well.
Yeah.
And there was a few decisions earlier on in the season where we missed penalties. We hit the post. I think we hit the post more than anyone else in the division.
Right.
And our XG, we were like mid table in the XG but we were obviously in the bottom, which could be there's a lack of confidence. There's you're just being unlucky, which is possible.
Yes.
And then I also think we brought in a lot of new players as well. So it was the case of, and Mark Noble obviously left.
These are iconic.
Yeah, Alan Irvine obviously left as well, who was a big part of the managers, and Stuart Pearce as well.
Stuart Pearce was just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. So Stuart Pearce left last summer, and Alan Irvine left the summer before. So I think all of that stuff can have an effect on a team where you've got all of these new individuals coming in,
yes,
who have to learn how to learn a new culture, a new language, the way the manager wants to play. Their families have to settle. You've got all of these sorts of things, alongside also losing all these characters and this, that and the other. So I think it was almost the opposite of a perfect storm in a weird sort of way, where there was a luck, there was this, there was that. But hopefully from this podcast recording,
yes,
we've lost one game in 10. Since 2023, we've played 31 games. We've won 10 of them. We've drawn 6, I think. I think I've
we're
got
testing
that,
yeah, now. Testing your knowledge.
I saw it earlier. I'll get on my phone out. Since 2023, we've been obviously a lot more solid. And I also think the other thing that happened for us as well was we had quite a few footballers that played an awful lot of football.
Fatigue.
You've got, especially when you've got like Kufau and Suchek, who are the stars in the Czech national team.
Yes.
As soon as they go away with them, they play every single game. As soon as Declan goes away with England, he seems to play every single game, which is great. And we want stars like that. But at the same time, it does put a lot of strain on their legs, their minds, everything.
Well, they're human beings.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's not spoken about enough in football. And the more time and that was a big eye opener for when I was with the women's as well. Yeah. Was you quickly realise that these people have personal problems. These people have
lives,
and emotions, all these sorts of things. Feelings. And it's how I suppose our job at West Ham or any team is to make sure that player is as focused on his job as possible, type thing.
Yeah.
And whatever that is, and to support that person. Yeah. With whatever that is, and also to try and bring in the people that we think can best cope with that as well. Because at West Ham, there is a level of expectation, and the fans are, which I think is testament to the club. There is obviously a large expectation that we at least,
of achievement.
So
sometimes unrealistic. That's for any club.
Maybe I don't know, but we're still in a great opportunity this year to achieve something, and I think we will.
Semi-final of Europa.
Semi-final of the conference, and hopefully, touch wood, see how we get on, but hopefully a reasonable finish.
Yeah.
Momentum. And I think the other thing as well was expectation. It's quite open that expectation going into this season, we've just spent 180 million quid on all these sorts of players, and
now you've got to get a tune.
Yeah, well, and it's also, we finished 7th last year, so it was, okay, how are we going to do better than that, type thing, where I think when you lose the first 3 or 4 games of the season, it's difficult because the new players are like, well, it's not really what I expected to come to. The fans then think, well, what's going on? So it's a difficult mentally, I think, for a lot of these players and for the...
All played out in public.
All played out in public. And, like, everyone knows the press are... They can be great, but they can also call for manager's head very quickly or call for anyone's head very quickly. So it's one of those things. But I think as...
That's
David,
what I mean by that. That weight of expectation again
and
on
I think,
people.
Yeah, I think David Moyes, to be honest, our success has almost was... Not a bad thing. Obviously, it was incredible, but it set the bar obviously a lot higher for everyone.
Yeah.
And he probably got the brunt of that because purely because he speaks to the to the press twice a week when there's lots of games.
Right. I mean, listen, I work with organisations all over the world, and if I compare that with football, football might not be big business from a financial point of view if you think about big organisations, mm-hmm. but it's big business from a publicity and a brand. It's global. It's iconic. Mm-hmm. How many managers have we lost this season already? 12, 13?
Yeah.
Is that bonkers, Jack, or is that just football? How do you see that?
I don't know. I think in every... Well, especially for West Ham, I think we like to think that we'd have someone for a long term. I think Dad's been involved in football for 30 years and he's only ever sacked 5 managers.
Right.
He's always... He likes to support someone. And likes to give them the benefit of the doubt because...
And time.
Yeah, and time. And hopefully you do enough due diligence to appoint this person that, I suppose, 5 bad games aren't the reason why you appointed that manager. But I think everyone's got their own sort of recipe for success type thing in terms of what they think's the magic formula to make football work.
I'm a Watford season ticket holder, Jack. I'm still trying to recover from that.
And it's just the case of I don't think anyone's sort of, well, apart from maybe Brighton and Brentford at the moment, but no one's cracked the code. And it's not impossible that, I don't know, Leicester's obviously a great example where they almost got relegated and then they went on to win the Premier League a year later. It's a game of real fine margins.
I think that's why people love it so much.
Yeah, mate, it's why it's incredible, and it's why, let's say you buy a machine in a factory for £10 million, you know that machine, unless something catastrophically goes wrong, is going to print X amount of these or make X amount of these things, but you can buy any player for X amount and there's no guarantee that that player's going to hit the ground running, and vice versa the other way, where you can bring in a player for £2 million and he can go and be the one of the best players, which I think makes it such an exciting sort of game and makes it so brilliant as well.
I think people forget, don't they? I had a guest come on called Nick Jankel who talked about, you know, a machine or like an aeroplane is complicated, but when you talk about human beings, it's complex. And you're talking about a club which is full of human beings and a team that is full of human beings and a management team that's full of human beings. That is complex.
Yeah.
And so there are so many things that could go wrong. I think it's very easy, isn't it, for people from the outside looking in to kind of go, well, I expect this.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that's not happening. And they oversimplify.
Yeah, I think as well. And I think the one thing with football as well is everyone focuses on the first team as well.
Right.
Or the men's team. And I think there's so many different amazing things that's happened at West Ham this year, whether that's the boys reaching the FA Youth Cup final, which I'm going to tomorrow.
Right.
The girls having another good season in the WSL. And I think there's so much brilliance that's happening at the club that we should be proud of as well. Us obviously reaching a semi-final again. And it's something that obviously you don't want to be... You've got to be very, very focused on the men's first team. But at the same time, you've also got to celebrate the amazing work that all the staff are doing, not just on the football side, but also on a marketing side, on a commercial side. Yeah. And all of these staff that are processing all these 60,000 tickets for every home game when someone loses their ticket or they lose their, I don't know, anything can happen,
well, that these people
are dealing with. Yeah,
keeping the show on the road.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's what's incredible. And I think the one good thing, obviously, when the results are good, is obviously it's a thanks to them as well to say, look, thank you for staying with us and obviously working hard and making sure that everyone can stay motivated as well, because everyone's obviously a lot more irritable when we are losing. So it's how you try and keep everyone focused and almost mentally ready.
So we've caught you at a good time, really. You must be in a good mood with things right now, Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
Had this been a month ago or so, who knows?
I think that's also a case as well, is how everyone, whether that's the manager, it's Dad, it's whoever, has to try and keep, maybe not positive, because when it's positive is probably the wrong word, but keep a level head and to keep
see it as it is.
Yeah, and to also make sure that everyone's still right at it as well. Like, even when you're feeling, I'm not to swear, but when you're feeling rubbish,
yeah,
to make sure that you, everyone still sees you as right up for it, right up for the fight, still got a lot to do, still got a lot to play for, still got a, like, anything. When, and I think that's massively important, whether that's in the office, at the training ground, whatever that is. And that was the same with the women's team as well. My last year at the women's team, we were fighting relegation. And it was to try and make sure that everyone was keeping
focused
and knew there was still a lot to play for, and not being depressed not being too down, because there's still so much more. That if everyone's down, then by the time you arrive, you're going to be 1-0 down or 2-0 down before you even know it.
Listen, there's life outside and after football as well. Just quick, how was the pandemic for you?
I loved it.
Tell me more. I think my daughter loved it, actually.
Yeah, I have to say, I thought the first 2 weeks, or like the first, obviously it was all a bit of an experience. Yeah. It was quite interesting on a women's side of things, and to be part of that process. When we had calls with the FA every week, we had players that were desperate to go home to see their family. We had a breakout 2 days before.
What, COVID?
COVID breakout in the camp 4 days, I think four days before Christmas.
Right.
So a lot of them weren't allowed to go home, like, and obviously all their families were at home. So that was quite difficult for some of them, where I try and think, there was some of the Australian girls, where obviously it was very, very strict in Australia, where they couldn't go back. So that was a mentally quite tough thing. But I personally found it quite productive. I didn't find that business stopped. I actually found that it was better, which I thought was weird. I thought it'd be the opposite, but sponsorship wise and things, we did really well. Like, it was quite weird. It was something a bit different. And I thought overall, I had quite a good time.
It was a weird and personal experience for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no right or wrong with it.
Yeah.
I think we've all got a personal story to tell around it. Tell me a little about, because obviously, you know, outside of football, you've got investments in a number of areas. You talked about care homes, Supply Life, and an automotive recruitment company.
Yeah.
So you're spreading your wings
and
looking outside of football. But tell us a little bit about, why are you starting to invest in things outside of football? And maybe let's use Supply Life as an example of what you're interested in at the moment.
Yeah, so Supply Life, I met them when they tested all the women's team. So they tested all the women's team about, so 3.5 years ago, I was saying. I suffered from eczema, bad eczema. And I took the test just to see if I could eliminate certain foods out of my diet to try and get rid of the eczema. And within 3 weeks of eliminating those foods, my eczema completely went. So it was an incredible for me, where I kept going to the doctor and they kept giving me different creams and different this and different that. But that sort of like just masked the problem, where the food intolerance test, in my opinion, sort of eradicated the problem from the, like, the core type thing, which was obviously great. And now we're lucky to help people with IBS, bloating, migraines, all these other sort of symptoms as well, tiredness.
Yes.
And we've been incredibly lucky to help a lot of people. And we're just actually at the moment going into business to business, but we're mostly business to consumer, so supplylife.com.
So you were quite involved with the business as well, as just investing?
Yeah, so I think for me it was the case of, I didn't want to invest in something and not be involved, because the main reason I'd be investing in something would be to make sure that I was continuing to learn as well, and I could have hands-on involvement. So for me to learn how Facebook advertisement works, and to learn how all these different sort of things, email marketing, this, that, and the other. At West Ham, you'd say, oh, can you send an email? And there would be 10 people there, or not 10, but there'd be 2 or 3 people that, and that would be done, it would be sent.
Yeah.
And it'd be the same with Facebook marketing or this, that, and the other, where Supply Life, when I invested, there was three people. Now we've got a team of 12. And it's been an incredible sort of journey to grow that, but to also see how we've grown a business and to also learn how to do all of those sorts of things, and to see what works. And you think, oh, 100% guaranteed this will work, and it explodes in your face. And then something you think, oh, this probably won't work, but we may as well give it a go, really does work. So it's all about testing and trialing and seeing what can work. And B2B, I sort of, is probably the next place in our in our journey.
Do you think that entrepreneurial spirit comes from you growing up in that environment?
I think definitely, and I think not only that, not only my environment, but also not only my home environment, but also all of my environment as well. When I used to go to football, I'd sit down with, you know, 12, 15 people that had all been all probably entrepreneurs type thing, or all in a business sort of environment. And I just love the idea of helping someone growing a business, and also just, I think it's really exciting to grow something and to see something, whether that is something small or whether that's something big. It's an exciting sort of thing to be part of something where you can make a big difference and a big impact, which I think is incredible.
Well, there's quite a timely and interesting case study at the moment, isn't there, about growing something small into something different, if we talk about Wrexham.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Maybe we have to do a big shout out to Ryan and Rod for what they got involved in 2 years ago. So, you know, you've got West Ham, which is a monolithic club, and now Wrexham are coming through the leagues into League Two. What's the view of what they're doing and how they're doing it? Do you watch that with interest? And do you think about, well, that's an interesting experiment going on?
Yeah, so look, I find it incredible. I think it shows you how hard football is, where they've tried to get promoted, I think, for the last
15 years.
Yeah, 15 years. And also they have, with the biggest budget in the National League, for the last 2 years, and they failed. And then finally they've done it this year.
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, I think it's unbelievable for football. I think anyone who says it's not great for football, it's the same with whatever you're watching, whether it's Sunderland Till I Die, the All or Nothing, however we can get more eyeballs onto football, and especially lower league football, it's incredible for everyone. And I think the amazing thing with football is there's so many stories and there's so many people connected to football clubs or to this or to that, that make things in, like, that make it really, really special. And I think it's the same with a lot of businesses, whether it's a cafe where Dawn, who's been working there for 25 years, there's saying about life, and obviously work's a big part on, especially football, because the fans are almost the owners of the club type thing, where they do govern everything that we do as owners, is to make sure that we're trying to think, okay, how can we make sure the club's better for the fans? And that's a big reason of what we try and do. And I think for them, I don't think they quite expected to be as emotionally attached as what they have become to Wrexham.
They're incredibly attached,
and
aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's the amazing thing with football, really.
If you had one piece of advice to give to Wrexham now going into League Two, what do you think it might be with the experiences that you've had?
I think they've done amazing. They brought in good people around them, which I think is really good. And I'd say just keep going.
Enjoy the journey.
They'll know this now as well. In celebrate the highs, because there's a lot more lows than there are highs. So when you have a good thing, so enjoy promotion, and then also just don't underestimate anyone or anything type thing, because it can be incredibly hard.
I think they're going to have a good party.
Yeah.
Off the back of this particular promotion.
Yeah. Don't expect the unexpected as well, because anything can happen in football.
Who knows? It could be West Ham playing Wrexham in 4 years' time, whatever it might be. What's next for you, Jack?
To be honest, just to continue to grow everything that I'm doing, and so I'm always looking for other businesses that I can take quite reasonable stakes of.
Yep.
And a business that's I suppose, not losing too much money that I think I can make a big impact on, really.
Okay. So you want to become an investor, almost an angel investor?
I think so. But at the same time, I don't want to spread myself too thin where no one's getting enough attention, especially when you invest in a business or the sort of business I've invested in. It's one of those things where they, because they're not quite startups, but they're not far off, they need a lot of time and care. But then as they grow, like Supply Life now, I'm not quite spending the same amount of time that I was spending on it, type thing. Yeah, so you can. But at the same time, it's been incredible. And I really love doing it. And Tech Fueled, which is the automotive recruitment company, that's done really, really well as well. So we're just continuing to push everything forward. But I think you've got to realise that there's always going to be bumps in the road in absolutely everything that you do. And if you think everything's going to be plain sailing, then
Trust me, it's not going to be. It really isn't. Listen, it's been great to chat to you. And I'm glad to say you're in a good mood because West Ham are doing well, even at the expense of Arsenal. But we won't come on to that. I'm going to ask you 10 rapid fire questions. You ready for this?
Yeah.
I actually did this with Stuart and some of these are the same. So it'll be interesting. But only a few. So you ready? Okay. PC or Mac?
PC.
Thought you might say that. Wine or beer?
Vodka.
Okay. Sports or the arts?
Sports.
I thought you might say that too. Would you travel east or travel west? So you are, I don't know, you are US bound.
It's only one place. To East London.
East London. All right, so east, all right. So close east. Breakfast or dinner?
Dinner.
Remote work or face-to-face?
Face-to-face, I think, is better.
Okay. Let's talk about time travel. Would you go 20 years back or 20 years forward? 20 years back would make you three, to be fair. But
forward.
Forward. All right. Picnic or
actually, no, back.
Back. Why? How come you changed your mind?
Because I'd figure out what the lottery numbers were, and then I'd go back.
I see what you've done there. All right. Picnic or barbecue?
Barbecue.
All right. Family reunion or friend reunion?
Friends.
Mum and dad might be listening to this.
Friends.
Right. Okay, fine. Friends. Arsenal or Man City for the title? Can't believe I've asked that.
I would prefer Arsenal won it. Because I think
someone's just groaned, actually, from the studio.
Because I think at the moment, Man City are making it all a bit boring for everyone else.
It's got to be Arsenal, right?
Yeah. And I think it would be good if Arsenal did win it to just shake things up a bit.
What do they need to do then on Wednesday when they go to the Etihad? That's probably a decider match. What do you reckon? What are they going to do?
I think the one thing they can't do, as they did in the the home game against Man City, is there was one or two individual errors that led to goals. And I think that's one thing they can't do.
When you're a youngster, you know what it was like when you were 17 as a manager. How do you not make an error when you're young?
It's incredibly hard. It's incredibly hard. And I, be honest with you, I don't envy them. And I think even if Arsenal don't win the league, it's been such an incredible achievement. I think most other years outside the Pep Guardiola and Klopp sort of era, they would have probably have won it. But I think we're extremely lucky that the Premier League's just become by far the best it's ever been, in my
opinion.
Best league
in the world, right?
Yeah, and I think the best it's ever been as well, because I think the players are fitter, they're technically better, I think absolutely everything. And it's, well, Southampton come to you guys and look at that, type thing, where I think in years past that might have been obviously a completely different sort of game.
Listen, things could be worse, couldn't they? You could be a Spurs fan. I'm so sorry. I've done what I said I wouldn't do. I've turned this into a football pod, so James, forgive me. Listen, Jack, it's been great having you in. Have you enjoyed this?
Yeah, it's been good. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Listen, hopefully you'll come back to us, but thanks for coming on to the Leadership Enigma.
Have it. Thank you.
Cheers.
Join us again next week for more tips and strategies on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or visit the dedicated website, www.leadersenigma.com, powered by Transform Performance International, where you can access our exclusive learning, including books, videos, bonus content, assessments, and more. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.